Okay, this week's parsha we have the, again, according to some opinions, the end of the tests of Avraham Avinu. Some people say his last test was the burial of his wife, even according to some opinions. But I want to go through a fascinating mahalich and tell you a very powerful story that happened to me just last night. I'm warning you, it's a weird story, and what I took from it's even weirder. But you know, we're all close here, so you can deal with my bizarre experience from last night. Avraham Avinu is the love we met after the best friends. Avraham's best friend was obviously Sarah. They had been partnering together for many years in the Kiruv network before Sarah ever came about. They were trying Kiruv, and Avraham was Makariv the Anashim, and Sarah's Makariv the Nashim, and they had a whole group going, a whole movement going of Kiruv. They were partners in every way possible. They had a very difficult life. Sarah was kidnapped twice, almost raped, whatever, married by other people, you know, she married to Avraham. And they ran for their lives. They had famine. They, you know, a lot happened. She couldn't have kids for many years. Hagar and Ishmael, they got through it all together. And then finally, the last part is she's blessed with a child. That child, we know, was Yitzchak. And Avram's given the test, as last week's parsha told us, like his Yitzhak. And we're told this week's parsha that she dies. Sarah dies. Chazal asked, what's the justification of the parsha? I'll read the Rashi inside. Rashi, in Pasuk. Here. Pasuk Beis. It says, V'talma Sarah b'kiryas arbeh hi chevron be'eretz v'kanan, v'yavo Avram l'spol the Sarah b'livkosa. Rashi's up here, v'yavo Avram to eulogize her. Says Rashi, Nismucha Misa Sarah like his Yitzchak. The Misa of Sarah is juxtaposed to the story of his Yitzchak. Why? That the news that the Akedah Yitzchak, her son, was brought to be slaughtered, and he almost carried it out. He almost actually killed his son in the end. When she heard that, Parcha Nishmasa, Miman of Emesa, her, she couldn't take it, and like her soul left her body. After everything, all the tests, Avraham, you imagine, goes home from his final test of Akedas Yitzchak to like finally like be with his wife, and like, we did it, honey, and she's on the ground, heart attack, dead. What a terrible way to end the story. And that's how it ends. And then Avraham, we know, goes through a whole process over here of burying and trying to find the right grave site, burial plot for her. The Sefer Nesivos Shalom asks a lot of questions on this set of psukim describing what happened to Sarah. Okay, so number one question he asks: if you look over here, actually, I have the schus of leaning today the parsha, just the first part of this the Thursday parsha. So if you look at the anyone here had got an aliyah today or knows Chai Sarah, how something's written differently a little bit? Is it? So what's unique about what letters? Excellent. Which is a less small letter? Nope. Close. Not the yud. Okay, you mentioned a lot of the letters, but that's none of those. If you look at a regular also, you'll see this all being taped, so I'm getting embarrassed before you stream letters out. But the liv kosa, the cuff. The live kosa. You don't have to guess it. Either you don't know. You don't have to guess. It's like you go through all phases. Either you know or you don't have to guess. And I'll tell you afterwards. The live kosa is a small chaf. You know what, why it's a small chaf? So the Baal Turim brings down a very unusual answer. The Baal Turim says, you know why it's a small chaf? Because he didn't cry so much. Avraham didn't cry so much. Listen, so it's 127, kind of hara. Like, that's not bad. So it's a good life. He didn't cry so much. So first of all, like, that, you know, people live together a long life. You would imagine it's more reason to cry, more memories. You know, there are many studies actually that are done that when people are married for X amount of years, when one spouse dies, there's a very unnatural speed at which the other spouse dies also. There's such a connection you have. They've been living together. They had their journey together. 127 years old, she dies. Avraham should be crying not less. His partner in Kiruv is gone. No, he's got only Yitzchak left now. He's got a small house. He kicked out of the house already. Only Yitzchak's left. And he's crying because, you know, she lived a good life. Why does Baal Turim mention that? He also asks, if you're going to if you're going to juxtapose the death of Sarah, but Tamla Sarah, Rashi here says that it happened because of Akedas Yitzchak, why does Rashi have in the second pasuk? Say the first pasuk. That Chai Sarah is mentioned now because Sarah is dead. I mean, well, just suppose to the right before, why does Rashi wait a pasuk? Now again, you might say because there it says that Sarah died. But in reality, we know Sarah is dead already. She's dying now. We're talking about her life. Why not mention the beginning of the Parsha, the very first pasuk we have in the Parsha? Say there, we're just supposed to this whole story because it's Akedas Yitzchak, Sarah dies as old as Akedas Yitzchak. Tell me right away that point. And the last question that Sivus Shalom raises and he asks is, well, there are two more questions, I should say. There's a concept that that a person who does a mitzvah ain't no nizakim. If you do a mitzvah, they don't get hurt by doing a mitzvah. It's actually a discussion in Maseches Psachim where a person who wants to do Bdikas Chametz, so he should check in certain holes and crevices in his walls even, and we say maybe you shouldn't do it in a certain place because there could be like a scorpion there or some other bug that could hurt you very badly. So the Gemara asks, what are you talking about? There's a din that Shluchei Mitzvah ain't nizakim. You're in the process of doing a mitzvah. Nothing bad's going to happen to you doing a mitzvah. And the Gemara gives an answer, says, no, it could be while you're doing a mitzvah, something might happen. You know, maybe afterwards you kept your hand there finding something, maybe I found some money there also, and then it could bite me. How could Avraham Avinu lose his wife as a result of a mitzvah? He did a Akedas Yitzchak, the biggest mitzvah, the biggest test in the world. He did it. And through his mitzvah, his wife died. That's not fair. That's not fair. And the last question he asks, the fourth question I'll mention that he asks, is, who is a greater Navi? Avram or Neviyah Sarah? Anyone know who's greater in their prophecies? I didn't know Sarah's greater. What's that? No, but we don't know that from the text. How do you know from the text that she was better? Because Hashem tells Avram, whatever your wife tells you, you listen to her. From there, Chazal says she was a greater Neviyah. How could Avram Avinu get Nevuah past Akedas Yitzchak and Sarah, when she hears about it, she dies? Forget about passing that. She can't even hear about it, she dies right away. How could that be? So again, there are four questions I want to remind you there are again. That he asked more than four. I'll remind you, these four brought down in the Siva Shalom, the son of a Rebbe. One question is again, why did Avram barely cried over his wife, small chaf? That's not, you'd imagine, you know, he would cry over her a lot. Especially if he felt he was, as a result of what he did, he killed his own wife. Number two is, we mentioned that if you want to juxtapose, and Rashi wants to quote that the result of Akedas Yitzchak was this death of Sarah, why wait the first pasuk and tell me only the second pasuk? Tell me right away. That's why she died. Third question we had is, what happened to the idea that Shluchei Mitzvah ain't nizakin? He did a mitzvah, why is she, he's lost his wife? That's the biggest damage you can imagine for mitzvah he's doing. And the fourth and final question he brings down, at least the fourth one that we're going to discuss right now, is she was a greater Nevi'ah than he was a Navi. How could he hear the Nevu'ah, go through and pass the test, and even her upon hearing the Nevi'ah, the Nevu'ah, or hearing the challenge, dies right on the spot? That last question, I'll give you a quick answer that I saw one time in Chaim Shmuel Levitz. It's not the answer I want to give you at the Mahalach. It's the answer, a very interesting answer, and something important for us to realize about ourselves as well. Rav Chaim Shmuel brings down and says that we can't pass any test without God's help. Nothing. When God gives us a test, it means that He gives us the power to pass it. Now, how we pass it could be God gives us strength to pass it. Could be He had put people in our lives to help us pass it. But God would never give you a test that you could not pass. Avraham Avinu is given the test, because it's like not Sarah, and therefore maybe Sarah is a greater Neviyah than Avram is a Navi, but it was Avram's test. And therefore, Hashem had to give him the ability to pass it. Again, it's Avram's choice whether he passes it or not. That's free choice. But the ability to pass has to be there, and therefore, Avram was given extra koach to pass that test. But Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz says, the same is not true with Sarah. She was blindsided by this discussion. It wasn't hers to be tested with. Upon hearing the fact that her son was almost killed, that was too much for her to bear, and she almost died, and she did die, according to the Chazal, because of that challenge. That's the way that Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, one shot he brings down as to explain why in the end she didn't make it, and he was able to listen to the test and pass it, even though she was a greater Nevi'ah than he was a Navi. It's not the shot I want to give you today, though. The shot I want to give you today, based on this shot brought down again in the Siva Shalom, it's a beautiful Mahalach, and he says, in reality, she did not die. She did not die because of Akedas Yitzchak. What are you talking about? Chazal say it, don't they? No. In reality, and I'll explain what this means, the Satan tries to get us. He tries to get us to fail in different ways, in different possibilities. And his ultimate failure he can do to us is that you shouldn't do the action. You should fail, you should mess up, you shouldn't succeed in your tests. But there are many times in life when people do succeed. And the Satan is not yet done. He has one more thing he wants to get. He wants to make you regret that you did it. For example, let's say over here you have a challenge. You go to yeshiva, and one of your brisk kol guys or your bayim or your shem bayim madrich challenges. He says, you know what? A lot of guys are going out tonight doing things that are not good. I challenge you. Be a man. Be a free thinker. Don't follow the masses. Don't go tonight. Stay back in. Learn the basement. I'll be a chavrusa of yours. You say, you know what? I'll do it. And you had a great hour chavrusa with your madrich. You're very proud of yourself. Until you go back to your room, you look at your phone, you see all the Snapchats of what you missed. Picture this, that thing over there. You say to yourself, wish I would have gone. Wish I would have gone. I regret not going. I do tshuva over my good deed. So Chazal tell us, that works. It's effective. Tshuva works to regret your bad deeds, and tshuva works to regret your good deeds. And it's like he didn't do it. Tshuva works. And therefore, Avraham Avinu was going on an Akedas Yitzchak mission. The hardest test, if we pass this test, then every single Rosh Hashanah, we blow the shofar, and Hashem's rachamim is moved. Because Avraham Avinu did not spare his own son from God. And if we pass this test, it's in our back pocket, Magen Avraham, for all of us forever. And Avraham passed. Despite all the Satan's challenges to get Avraham not to do it, Chazal tell us that someone came and challenged him, what, slaughter your son, the same son that Hashem said that you're supposed to be your destiny, your future. And there was a big water that was blocking him. He had to walk through the water up to and he did it anyways, despite all these things that were challenging, and he passed every of those tests. And the final test he has to pass is when it's all said and done, he comes back home and his wife is dead. And he's told she's dead as a result of the test. She heard what happened, heart attack, she died. Now what? You can still feel proud of what you did after that? And the answer is, he did feel proud of what he did. Because he did not relate and correlate the death of his wife to the sacrifice, near sacrifice of his son. Because it was not correlated. It was a Yetzer HaHara move to try to make Avram think that that's why she died. And that answers all the questions. Question one we asked, why would he cry over only a little bit? Chaf, it's only a little bit. Because he was not crying over a woman who was taken from her life early. She lived 127 full years. He did not fall for the trick that a person could have when they look at what happened based on their actions. And look what happened, you must feel bad about it. Chaval, you did it, right? No, he didn't cry for her extra hard like a guy who was caused his wife to die. He cried for like a woman who died 127 years, which is very sad. But not like he was the cause of her death, because he wasn't. It doesn't say in Rashi right away that she died for that reason, because it's not true. It was just meant to look that way. So Rashi doesn't put it there. He waits one pasuk to say it, because it's not really what happened. And Shluchei Mitzvah ain't Nizakin. She didn't die because he did a mitzvah. She died anyways. But the Satan put it right next to the action so he might think that's why she died. The final question, which we answered, is wasn't she a greater Nevi'ah than he was a Navi? The answer is she was. And she did not die when she heard the news that he was almost. She could have handled that. She died because her life was up. 127 years, good years, full of mitzvahs and simcha, and her life expired, battery expired. That's why she died. But the Satan put it in a place with the ultimate hope that whatever Avram did, he would regret at the end of the day. We say every single day in davening, in Ma'ariv, we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Haser Satan Milfneinu U'Me'achareinu. Which means remove the Satan from in front of me, from behind me. What does that mean? Is there something in front of me? If I turn around, I'll see Satan behind me. Also, doesn't mean that. It says in the Siva Shalom, it means in front means before I do the action. Hashem, help me beat the Satan from before I do the action, in front of me. I haven't got there yet. Help me get there. Do the action properly. But there's an equal Satan behind me. If I succeed in doing the action, there's a chance for later regret. That's called Me'acharenu, after the fact. He's behind me right now. He wants me to feel bad I did that thing. Chaval, you went to this place instead of that place. Shame you stayed over here instead of going with those boys over there, where they went to. And he wants you to regret what you've done good. And we daven Hashem every single day, please help me, Haser Satan milufneinu u'me'acharenu. Help me spare the feeling of regret of things that I've done well in my life, that maybe if I would have looked at and all the options were out there, maybe I'd feel like I wish I'd done that thing instead. Help me defeat that Yitzhar as well. Last night, I went to a funeral of a friend of mine, not him, but I'm still living, but of his second parent in the last 2 years. His father passed away just a few days ago, and they buried him right where I live in Beit Shemesh, right near where I live. So 2 years ago, I went to the funeral of his mother, and yesterday, last night, I went to the funeral of his father. Now, I got there, I was told the funeral was at 7:30, and I got there at 7:35. I figured, I mean, the speaking and everything like that, I'll be there for it. And as I'm driving in, I see people, you know, congregating by a grave. Roll the window down. I said, is this the Willig funeral? I said, yeah. I'm like, I missed the whole thing. I never, I just wanted to hear him speak, you know, see if I could see him for a second, and then head out, maybe put a few, you know, shovels of dirt on the coffin and then leave, as I usually do. But I missed the entire funeral. And the guy hadn't seen me, honestly. He's there by his father's. So I ran right down. I gave him a big hug. You know, I'm so sorry for your loss. I decided I have to stay for the Maariv. I can't not go to the Maariv. I just got here just now. I have to stay for Maariv. So they stayed at the Maariv by the area where the funeral, the home was. I didn't have a sitter on me because the door was locked at the time. So I was doubting my heart. So I was closing my eyes. I would get distracted. And I'm hearing this 43-year-old young man, who's now mourning the loss of his second parent, of his two parents. And I hear his voice. Now, you all sound as what you do right now when you're 18 years old, 19 years old. Your voices will not change much from 19 till 43, 18 to 43. So this is 25 years ago. You know, I've seen him maybe a few times in the middle when I was in YU with him, but like not much since I got married. And his voice is, my mom's the same. It's a very unique voice, and it's the same voice that I had when we were younger, 18 years old. And I'm closing my eyes and dominating. I'm hearing his voice. I'm like, I know it's happening without him. I'm like, this is really weird. I feel like I'm 18 right now. Like, I felt like I was back in yeshiva. Like, I was open my eyes up and picture myself in yeshiva with my dormitory there, my basement. It was a very freaky experience. And a cemetery, so it's already freaky already. And it's nighttime, which is also freaky in a cemetery. So I'm here, close my eyes, and I'm thinking to myself, like, I cannot believe. Well, I was on yesterday, so I had back and forth with my davening, but I was like, my mind was, like, deep in thought. Like, I know, I feel myself back in yeshiva, but I know I'm 25 years later than that right now. And I started to play in my mind. This is the weird part. All my decisions from 18 to 43 that were significant. I don't mean like, you know, what I ate for dinner that night. I mean like decisions I made that defined who I am today. You know, where I went after after my yeshiva experience and getting married to my wife and my career profession, my career choice, going back to Florida for a few years. I was starting to while his voice is saying Kaddish, his voice like bring me back. And I'm going through, and I open my eyes at the end of davening, and I realize the following thing. And I'm not bragging when I say this. I did not regret one thing I had done my entire life. I don't mean individual act. I've done things wrong in my life. I don't mean that. I mean, I did not regret a big decision I made in my life. And I was like, I felt such a level of like comfort that, and I didn't put together even this parsha. It's about this parsha of regret. The parsha of not regretting things you've done well. And I started to think of you, you know, because I was thinking of me at the time when I was in your seats. I was stuck in that moment. And my friends I went to yeshiva with, that I don't know where half of them even are anymore, but I can tell you a lot of them have gone through a lot of things. And much of them are regretful. Much. To go through life and feel like I don't regret what I did means I feel like I'm somewhere where I'm supposed to be. I don't have a well-paying job. You know, I didn't care about that. It wasn't my be-all, end-all. But if I would have, and I made sacrifices for my family, for my job, I'd regret that. If I made sacrifices for my personal life, for my job, that was just about making money, I'd regret that. If I made sacrifices where I married a woman who was beneath my religious level because I was attracted to her and relationship with her already, and at the end of the day, I was stuck because of it, I'd regret that. And if I raised my kids in a way where I felt like the kids I raised have terrible value systems, I would regret that. B'liyah and Hara, because Rachel should give me gifts of being able to continue. I do not regret a thing that I get. Many things I did, individual things. But I picture you in this room right now, or having, and you fast forward 25 years from now. And I know it's going to be hard for you to do because you don't know what it's like to be 43 years old. But where do you see yourself? Where do you see yourself? What do you see in front of you? You're married with a family. What's your job? What priorities do you want your kids to have? Passionate Washington Redskins fans. Okay, you know, that's regretful. I'll tell you, it's regretful. That's where we're putting our stock and our energies. Successful businessmen. Okay, it's nice. They have money. Beautiful. So do what with it. Makes you happy in the end. Sometimes not. What in the world are we running after right now? We're in 25 years from now. Hopefully it shouldn't be anyone in this room, but you'll see someone that you met when you were younger in yeshiva. And you'll close your eyes to daven with him, hopefully. And you hear his voice, and it's going to take you back to this moment in time. And there's been 25 years have passed since this moment in time. What are you thinking about? You know, there's a list of things that you wish were different. Because I can tell you one thing. I know plenty of people who have a very long list of things they wish were different. That's why they have what's called midlife crises. Because they're looking around like, what am I doing? What happened until now? What are you doing? What happened until now? He's been following. He's been doing things. He hasn't been thinking things through. To be able to say about yourself, I don't regret a thing that I've done. Again, I want to repeat, I've done many things wrong, individual things in my life, but not decisions that I made that became who I am today. And the truth is, every decision you make makes who you are today also. I don't want to belittle that point. But you have to first know, what are you aiming for? What in the world are you looking for? Because I can guess, if you just take a typical person who's there to try to get a beautiful wife and a great job with lots of money and all those things, and that's your focus right now, for most of you, in 25 years from now, there'll be things that didn't work out the way you wanted to. For most of you. Because you can't control certain things, but you can only control yourself, that you control. And for you to have like a goal that I want to be the best version of myself, that includes many areas, maybe professionally also, hopefully it should be, religiously, you know, as a son, as a friend, as a husband, as a father, and you meet all those expectations, then I bet 20 years from now you're going to feel like the happiest guy in the world with no regrets. But if you can't put, you know, these more important things first, if you'll risk things for this year because you want us to have a fun time and chill, and be with the boys, doing things that are just not working for where you're heading in the long run, then you'll look back and you'll feel like, what did I do? I look at this guy and I see myself, and where did I go wrong? You'll have many things that will pop into your mind that might be regretful. This is the parsha about non-regretting. Most important thing, not regretting, is that you should have to do the actions that don't cause regret. And it's November 1st. It's right after, you know, a day called Halloween in America. And I can't tell you every single year how many people do the dumbest things in this time of year. This Halloween party. Someone told me it's the Yeshiva League Halloween parties. Halloween is not a Jewish concept. And what happens to parties are not Jewish themes. If you go to a Halloween party, it means that you're not there. You're living your life for those things, that's regretful. And if you don't get past that, you will live a life of regret. Because there'll be some hole in your soul that is never will be, not because you went to a party, because this is what you're chasing in life. There'll be a hole in your soul that you will never fill. And 25 years from now, you're going to hear a friend of yours, Nebuch, say Kaddish over his second parents. And your eyes will be closed and you'll hear his voice and he'll take you back. And you're going to think to yourself, what in the world did I do that? I don't mean by a party, I mean life. You should be Zocha to look at Avraham Avinu, a person who did not regret. Because every action he did was calculated and was thought out. Where is he heading towards? A goal that would be a goal we should all dream for. The greatest connection with the greatest thing in the world, the creator of the world. That's all he cared about. And he risked everything for that, including his own child. You could never regret life if that's where you're heading. Ever. But if you're heading for wealth, that's your dream. Women. Fame. Look around you. Look at the people who run after women, wealth, and fame. How many are married to the same woman they started married to? Any? How many are not addicted to drugs or alcohol or medications? Are there any? Barely any who are successful in money and in fame and pretty women. They can't stay with the same woman. Everything, life is perfect, isn't it? What is wrong with them? Because those things don't mean anything. And that means if that's what you're running after, that means you don't mean anything either. There's nothing that's worth chasing that's so fleeting. It's just a waste. It's just the game. But when you win the game is when you don't chase those things. You might get them anyways, and if you get them, kol kavod, you should have those things. You have a beautiful life. You should have lots of money. But don't chase it. If it happens upon you, great. Chase one thing only is the most important thing in life. What I'm doing here. What did I put in this world for? God put me in the world for what reason? For what reason? To get close to him. That's it. If I chase that, home run, no regrets. If I chase things that are there to distract me from that, or I regret my good actions because I lost some other things, we should daven, because Baruch Hu should always be Mesir Satan Milfaneinu. Very important Milfaneinu. And also Me'acharinu. Have a good Shabbos.